So if we do not become multiplanetary and ultimately go beyond our solar system, annihilation of all life on Earth is a certainty.
We got to fight for Team Human. Like, yeah. If we don't fight for it as humans, who will?
Yeah, I mean, if the Earth exists and humans do not, then it's like we're saving the planet for who at that point?
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Do you think that they would want us to know? Or do you think they would just be observing and making sure we don't blow ourselves up?
So quitting is not even like...
It's not in my nature. And I don't care about optimism or pessimism. Fuck that, we're going to get it done.
What do you think about AI replacing jobs, though? Because that's a big concern. Even if AI doesn't sort of go rogue and start doing something directly horrible, I think a lot of people's concerns is just, hey, what about everyone's jobs?
You know, a lot of jobs that currently exist won't exist in the future, but I think there will be new jobs. And I do think, like, in a benign AI scenario, we will really have an age of abundance. I think really goods and services, unless they're artificially made scarce, like it's specialized artwork or you want that particular house in that neighborhood, like it has to be an artificial scarcity, but anything that is not made artificially scarce will be plentiful as in a benign AI scenario. You'll be able to have any products and services you want.
Mm-hmm. That
anyone will.
Does that not start to cause a whole new level of problems?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. There's some things which sound like a blessing, but may in fact be a curse.
Yeah.
Like I think you will live forever. It sounds like a blessing, and it's actually a curse. You would not want to live forever. You don't know how long forever is. And if you say another potential curse is you can have anything you want effortlessly.
Mm.
Are you sure you want that?
Yeah.
Does anything matter at that point?
Yeah.
Now, and the thing is that on a galactic timescale, even with sublight travel, you could absolutely colonize the whole galaxy, even some of the neighboring galaxies. So if you said a million years there's no new physics, could you colonize the galaxy in a million years? Absolutely. The entire galaxy.
So you would start with Mars, build bases on Mars, then use Mars to jump off to all these other planets, set up places there, and over thousands of years, easily.
Yeah, just kind of like, you know, hop from one solar system to the next, and yeah.
You know, physics they call sort of the Fermi paradox. After when Enrico Fermi was an amazing physicist, asked the fundamental question, where are the aliens?
Yeah.
A lot of people ask me, you know, where are the aliens? And I think if anyone would know about aliens on Earth, it would probably be me.
I would think.
Yeah, I'm, you know, very familiar with space stuff. And I've seen no evidence of aliens. So I would immediately tweet it out. It says, split second. I'd be like, that would be like probably a tough tweet of all time. Found one, guys. It's a jackpot. Some 8 billion likes, you know? Next level jackpot if you find the aliens.
But you were saying that our consciousness makes us unique in the universe so far as we know. And that we take
I'm not saying that we are unique. I'm simply stating to the best of my knowledge that there is no evidence for other conscious life. I hope that there is, and I hope they're peaceful, obviously, the two important characteristics. I'm just saying we haven't seen anything yet. In order to pass a very important great filter, I think we need to be a multi-planet species. This may sound somewhat esoteric to a lot of people, but like eventually, given enough time, the Earth is likely to experience some calamity. That could be something that humans do to themselves or an external event like happened to the dinosaurs. Eventually... And if none of that happens, and somehow magically we keep going, then the sun will the sun is gradually expanding, and will engulf the Earth, and probably Earth gets too hot for life in about 500 million years. It's a long time, but that's only 10% longer than Earth has been around. And so if you think about like the current situation, it's really remarkable and kind of hard to believe, but. Earth's been around 4.5 billion years, and this is the first time in 4.5 billion years that it's been possible to extend life beyond Earth. And that window of opportunity may be open for a long time, and I hope it is, but it also may be open for a short time. And we should, I think it was wise for us to act quickly while the window is open, just in case it closes.
And what about the value? I mean, I think a lot of the value of work isn't just getting money to buy things. It's
right.
The meaning, it's the purpose, it's knowing that you worked afford this thing, right? It's different. It's different to get $10 million because someone just gave you $10 million or you won a lottery versus you created a business and sold products and services that helped you to earn that money.
Exactly. So it's like, how do we find meaning and relevance?
Yeah.
If you have an age of abundance where the computer, you just ask for anything and get it, it is something we'll have to struggle with. I think that's kind of most likely where we're headed is an age of abundance. But it will definitely cause some existential angst.
By the way, hit the like button and follow my YouTube channel. I already work on the next episode like this.
How much time before there's regular travel back and forth to Mars, roughly? Like a real civilization on Mars?
Well, I think it's going to take a while to build a real civilization. The threshold that really matters is we're getting past the great filter. Do we have enough resources on Mars such that if the spaceships from Earth stop coming,
you can survive?
Yeah. So you can only be just missing one little thing. You'd be like, you're on a long sea voyage, and the only thing you're missing is vitamin C. It's only a matter of time, you know.
Yeah.
And then it's gonna be curtains. So you got to have all the things necessary to sustain civilization on Mars. And the reason that the ships from Earth stop coming could be World War III, or it could be due to a slow decline of civilization. So civilization here on Earth could end with a bang or a whimper.
Or natural disasters.
Yeah.
Asteroid impacts. Yeah, that would
be up in the bang category.
Yeah.
But it also could be like a whole series of things. Like what killed the dinosaurs? Well, right. It wasn't just one thing, you know.
Right.
It was like a whole bunch of things happened in a row. They could have taken any one of those things, they had like three things happen, and no dinosaurs.
The smartest creatures, as far as we know, on this Earth are humans, is our defining characteristic.
Yes.
We're obviously weaker than, say, chimpanzees, less agile, but real smarter. So now what happens when something vastly smarter than the smartest person comes along in Silicon Valley? It's very difficult to predict what will happen in that circumstance. Yeah, so the danger, really, AI is perhaps more dangerous than, say, mismanaged aircraft designed for production maintenance or bad car production, in the sense that it has the potential, however small one may regard that probability, but it is non-trivial. It has the potential of civilizational destruction. There's movies like Terminator, but it wouldn't quite happen like Terminator, because the intelligence would be in the data centers.
Right.
The robot's just the end effector. But I think perhaps what you may be alluding to here is that regulations are really only put into effect after something terrible has happened.
That's correct.
And if that's the case for AI, and we're only putting regulations after something terrible has happened, it may be too late to actually put the regulations in place. The AI may be in control at that point.
Yes, it's funny, the universe appears to be 13.8 billion years old, like 4.5 billion years old. In another half billion years or so, the sun will expand and probably evaporate the oceans and make life impossible on Earth, which means that if it had taken consciousness 10% longer to evolve, it would never have evolved at all, just 10% longer. And I wonder how many dead one-planet civilizations there are out there in the cosmos that never made it to the other planet and ultimately extinguished themselves or were destroyed by external factors, probably a few. It's only just possible to travel to Mars, just barely. If G was 10% more, it wouldn't work, really.
But you think that we take our existence here for granted?
Yeah, I think
that there are threats to it.
Yeah, exactly. So I just think we should not assume that civilization is robust. And if you look at the history of civilizations, the rise and fall of the ancient Egyptians, the ancient Sumerians, Rome, you know, there's throughout the world there have been rise and fall of many civilizations. So there's an arc, there's sort of a life cycle arc to civilizations, just as there is to individual humans.
Yes.
And I think we just want to make sure that we have civilization go onward and upward. That's, for example, why I'm concerned about decreasing birth rates and the fact that, for example, Japan had twice as many deaths last year as births.
What's your source of belief in situations like this, when the engineering problem is so difficult, there's a lot of experts, many of whom you admire, who have failed in the past.
Yes.
And a lot of people, you know, a lot of experts, maybe journalists, all the kind of, you know, the public in general have a lot of doubt about whether it's possible. And you yourself know that even if it's a non-null set, non-empty set of success, it's still unlikely or very difficult. Like, where do you go to, both personally, intellectually, as an engineer, as a team, like for source of strength needed to sort of persevere through this and to keep going with the project, take it to completion?
A source of strength. I just really not how I think about things. I mean, for me, it's simply this is something that is important to get done. And we should just keep doing it, or die trying. And I don't need a source of strength.
So quitting is not even like...
It's not in my nature.
Okay.
And I don't care about optimism or pessimism. Fuck that, we're going to get it done.
I think what it is that concerns people about it, number one, you know, number one being new, but I think the main thing is the fact that this is something that's like inside your body, right? I think the idea of putting a chip in, the idea of someone putting a chip in my brain, I just have a visceral no, right? Like I have a very visceral reaction.
It's an optional thing. I mean, we're not going to, you know.
Would it be though long term?
I mean, I hope so. I think it should be optional.
Yeah.
It'd be bizarre if it was not. No, I think it's.
Kind of like how, the reason I ask is because smartphones right now are sort of optional, but if you don't have a smartphone, the way everything is sort of designed around society, you cannot have a smartphone, but it's a massive hindrance and disadvantage in many ways.
True. A smartphone is almost essential in a modern society to do things.
Yeah. So could a Neuralink end up in that same sort of place?
It's possible, but I'm just saying, if it does, it's many decades from now. So it's not like, you know, it's not today's problem.
Yeah.
I'd worry a bit more about digital superintelligence. I'd worry about, let's try to avoid World War III.
Yeah.
Let's make sure we're at least having enough kids to sustain our population. You know, basic stuff like that.
Yeah.
As the saying goes, be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a battle you know nothing about.
Yeah, it's true.
What's something difficult you're going through that people don't often see?
Trying to feed Uber Lilith. No, I mean, you know, I mean, my mind is a storm, and I don't think most people would want to be me. They may think they'd want to be me, but they don't know. They don't understand.
How are you doing?
I mean, overall, okay. In the grand scheme of things, I can't complain.
Do you get lonely?
Sometimes, but my kids and friends keep me company.
So not existential.
There are many nights I sleep alone. I don't have to, but I do.
I think it was Carl Sagan that said, like, if there either are a lot of aliens or none, and they're equally terrifying. If there are a lot of aliens, well, the invasion ship bug infestation, just, you know, like the
Starship Trooper style.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like an alien civilization might just view us as like a bug infestation,
right?
You know, it's like, hey, we left that planet, it was fine, now it's got a bunch of bugs, just go fumigate it, you know, like we'd fumigate a house. That's certainly possible. And then, but if there are no aliens, well, could it be that all civilizations are just destroyed before they become interstellar, you know? So, and I want to be clear, like, to the best of my knowledge, there is no evidence for alien life on Earth. There's no direct evidence for alien life. No, you know. And if somebody says, "Oh, what about this alien for, sighting or whatever?" I'm like, listen, it's got to be at least as good as a 7-Eleven or ATM cam, okay? It's like, if somebody's got to have at least like an iPhone 1 level camera,
yeah,
like something, you know.
The problem with that is it's just too easy to fake things today, too.
You think that's real. It is conceivable that AI could take control and reach a point where you couldn't turn it off and it would be making the decisions for people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
No, that's definitely where things are headed, for sure. Things like say, ChatGPT, which is based on GPT-4 from OpenAI, which
right.
is a company that I...
played a critical role in creating, unfortunately.
Back when it was a nonprofit.
Yes. I mean, the reason OpenAI exists at all is that Larry Page and I used to be close friends, and I would stay at his house in Palo Alto, and I would talk to him late into the night about AI safety. And at least my perception was that Larry was not taking AI safety seriously enough.
What did he say about it?
He really seemed to be one sort of a digital super intelligence, basically digital god, if you will, as soon as possible.
He wanted that?
Yes. He's made many public statements over the years that the whole goal of Google is what's called AGI, Artificial General Intelligence, or Artificial Super Intelligence. I agree with him that there's great potential for good, but there's also potential for bad. And so if you've got some radical new technology, you want to try to take the set of actions that maximize the probability it will do good and minimize the probability it will do bad things.
Yes.
It can't just be health leather. Let's just go, you know, barreling forward and, you know, hope for the best. And then at one point, I said, well, what about, you know, we're going to make sure humanity's okay here. and then he called me a speciesist.
Did he use that term?
Yes. And there were witnesses. I wasn't the only one there when he called me a speciesist. And so I was like, okay, that's it. Yes, I'm a speciesist. Okay. You got me. What are you? Yeah, I'm fully a speciesist. Busted. That was the last straw. At the time, Google had acquired DeepMind, and so Google and DeepMind together had about 3/4 of all the AI talent in the world. They obviously had a tremendous amount of money and more computers than anyone else. So I'm like, okay, we have a unipolar world here, where there's just one company that has close to a monopoly on AI talent and computers, like scaled computing. And the person who's in charge doesn't seem to care about safety. This is not good. So then I thought, okay, what's the furthest thing from Google would be like a non-profit that is fully open, because Google was closed for profit. So that's why the open in OpenAI refers to open source, transparency, so people know what's going on.
Yes.
And that it, we don't want it to have like while I'm normally in favor of for profit, we don't want this to be sort of a profit maximizing demon from hell.
That's, you know, right.
That just never stops.
Right.
So that's how OpenAI would.
So you want speciesist incentives here. Incentives that.
Yes, like, I think we want pro human.
Yeah.
Let's make the future good for the humans.
Yes.
Yes. Because we're humans. Right. And also the other creatures on Earth too, I think people sometimes take the fact that like we're here on Earth for granted, you know, and that there's the consciousness is just a normal thing that happens. But to the best of my knowledge, we see no evidence of conscious life anywhere in the universe. I mean, to me, in terms of what consciousness feels like, it feels like consciousness is in a different dimension. But this could be just an illusion. You know, if you damage your brain in some way physically, you damage your consciousness, which implies that consciousness is a physical phenomenon, in my view. The things that I think are really quite likely is that digital intelligence will be able to outthink us in every way, and it will certainly be able to simulate what we consider consciousness. So to a degree that you would not be able to tell the difference.
And from the aspect of the scientific method, it might as well be consciousness if we can simulate it perfectly.
If you can't tell the difference, and this is sort of the Turing test, but think of a more sort of advanced version of the Turing test. If you're talking to a digital superintelligence and can't tell if that is a computer or a human, like let's say you're just having a conversation over a phone or a video conference or something where you think you're talking, looks like a person, makes all of the right inflections and movements and all the small subtleties that constitute a human, and talks like a human, makes mistakes like a human, and you literally just can't tell. Are you video conferencing with a person or an AI?
Might as well.
Might as well.
Be human.
And the sun is expanding slowly. But it will heat the Earth up at some point in the future, boil the oceans, and Earth will become like Venus, where no life as we know it is impossible. So if we do not become multiplanetary and ultimately go beyond our solar system, annihilation of all life on Earth is a certainty. And it could be as little as, on the galactic timescale, half a billion years. You know, long time by human standards, but that's only 10% longer than Earth has been around at all. So if life had taken 10% longer to evolve on Earth, it wouldn't exist at all.
We got a deadline coming up. Yeah. Better hurry. But that said, as you said, humans, intelligent life on Earth developed a lot of cool stuff very quickly. So
yes,
it seems like becoming multiplanetary is almost inevitable, unless we destroy.
We need
thing.
To do it. I mean, it's not. I mean, I suspect that there. If we are able to go out there and explore other star systems, that we there's a good chance we find a whole bunch of long dead one planet civilizations.
Yeah,
they never made it past their home planet.
That's so sad.
Yeah,
that's sad. Also fascinating.
I mean, there are various explanations for the Fermi paradox. And one is the sort of, there's these great filters, which civilizations don't pass through. And one of those great filters is, do you become a multi-planet civilization or not? And if you don't, it's simply a matter of time before something happens on your planet, you know, either natural or man-made, that causes us to die out, like the dinosaurs. Where are they now? They didn't have spaceships. So
I think the more likely thing is, because just to empathize with the aliens, that they found us and they're protecting us. And letting us be.
I hope so. And nice aliens.
Just like the tribes in the Amazon. The uncontacted tribes were protecting them. That's what...
That would be a nice explanation.
Or you could have like... what was it? I think Andre Kapathy said it's like the ants in the Amazon asking, where's everybody?
Well, they do run into a lot of other ants.
That's true.
They have these ant wars.
Sounds like a good TV show.
Yeah, they literally have these big wars between various ants.
What are we talking about? Okay.
Yeah, so aliens, I mean, I don't know. Look, I think the smart move is just, you know, this is the first time in the history of Earth that it's been possible for life to extend beyond Earth. That window is open. Now, it may be open for a long time, or it may be open for a short time. And it may be open now and then never open again. So I think the smart move here is to make life multiplanetary while it is possible to do so. We don't want to be one of those lame one-planet civilizations.
No.
That just dies out.
No, those are lame.
Yeah, lame. self-respecting civilization would be one planet.
There's not going to be a Wikipedia entry for one of those. And pause. Does SpaceX have an official policy for when we meet aliens?
No.
Okay. That seems irresponsible.
I mean, look, if I see the slightest indication that there are aliens, I will immediately post on the X platform.
Yeah.
Anything I know.
It could be the most liked, reposted post of all time.
Yeah, I mean, look, we have more satellites up there right now than everyone else combined. So, you know, we know if we've got to maneuver around something. And I don't have to maneuver around anything.
You know, there's some risk it may, you know, view humanity negatively and decide that we're a blight on the Earth. Like I think like a very dangerous thing would be if the sort of human extinctionist philosophy somehow got into AI, that would be bad. Like that guy that... was on the front page of the New York Times saying, you know, the 8 billion people on Earth.
We don't want him coding it.
We don't want him coding it. Yeah, safe to say.
What about,
and there's quite a few people in this neck of the woods who have that either explicit or implicit extinctionist view.
Yes.
Where they view humanity as a blight on the face of the Earth.
Yeah, there's a lot of antinatalists in the world and people who...
anti-human.
Yes, yes. Like you said, people who don't have the... pride in being human, right? There's people who
they feel
like
guilty or
something. People would even say that that's a speciesism, you know? That's a
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a human supremacist. I'll be open about that one.
Yeah. I mean, I think we got to fight for Team Human. Like, if we don't fight for it as humans, who will?
Yeah. I mean, if the Earth exists and humans do not, then it's like we're saving the planet for who at that point?
Yeah.
To what degree do you think war is part of human nature versus a consequence of how human societies are structured? I ask this as you have somehow controversially been a proponent of peace.
I'm generally a proponent of peace. I mean, ignorance is perhaps, in my view, the real enemy to be countered. That's the real hard part. Not, you know, fighting other humans. But all creatures fight. I mean, the jungle is a... You look at the... People think of this nature as perhaps some sort of peaceful thing, but in fact, it is not. There's some quite funny Werner Herzog thing where he's like in the jungle, like saying that it's like basically just murder and death in every direction. Mm-hmm. I mean, the plants and animals in the jungle are constantly trying to kill and eat each other every single day, every minute. So it's not like, you know, we're unusual in that respect.
Well, there's a relevant question here, whether with greater intelligence comes greater control over these base instincts for violence.
Yes. We have much more of an ability to control our limbic instinct for violence than, say, a chimpanzee. And in fact, if one looks at, say, chimpanzee society, it is not friendly. I mean, the bonobos are an exception. But chimpanzee society is filled with violence, and it's quite horrific, frankly. That's our limbic system in action. Like, you don't want to be on the wrong side of a chimpanzee. It'll eat your face off and tear your nuts off.
Yeah, basically, there's no limits or ethics or... they're almost at just war. There's no just war in chimpanzee societies. Is war and dominance by any means necessary?
Yeah, chimpanzee society is a primitive version of human society. They're not like peace-loving, basically, at all. There's extreme violence. And then once in a while, somebody who's watched too many Disney movies decides to raise a chimpanzee as a pet. And then that eats their face or rips their nuts off or chews their fingers off, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's happened several times.
Ripping your nuts off is an interesting strategy for interaction.
So it's happened to people. It's unfortunate. Like, that's, I guess, one way to ensure that the other chimp doesn't, you know, contribute to the gene pool.
Well, from a martial arts perspective, it's a fascinating strategy.
the nut ripper.
I wonder which of the martial arts teaches that.
I think it's safe to say if somebody's got your nuts in their hands and has the option of ripping them off, you will be amenable to whatever they want.
Yeah. Safe to say. Do you see the value of using machine learning to understand the language of the two-way communication with the brain?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're a neural net, and that, you know, AI is basically a neural net. So it's like digital neural net will interface with biological neural net and hopefully bring us along for the ride, you know. But the vast majority of our intelligence will be digital. Think of like the difference in intelligence between your cortex and your limbic system is gigantic. Your limbic system really has no comprehension of what the hell the cortex is doing. You know, it's just literally hungry, you know, or tired, or angry, or sexy, or something. You know, that communicates that impulse to the cortex and tells the cortex to go satisfy that. Then a massive amount of thinking, like truly stupendous amount of thinking, has gone into sex without purpose, without procreation, which is actually quite a silly action in the absence of procreation. It's a bit silly.
Well,
so why are you doing it? Because it makes the limbic system happy. That's why.
That's why.
But it's pretty absurd, really.
Well, the whole of existence is pretty absurd in some kind of sense.
Yeah. But I mean, this is a lot of computation has gone into how can I do more of that with procreation not even being a factor? Well, I mean, the reason I guess I care about us becoming a multi-planet species and a space-faring civilization is foundationally, I love humanity. And so I wish to see it prosper and do great things and be happy. And if I did not love humanity, I would not care about these things.
So when you look at the whole of it, the human history, all the people who's ever lived, all the people alive now, pretty... We're okay. on the whole, we're a pretty interesting bunch.
Yeah, all things considered. And I've read a lot of history, including the darkest, worst parts of it. And despite all that, I think on balance, I still love humanity.
You joked about it with the 42. What do you think is the meaning of this whole thing? Is there a non-numerical representation?
I think what Douglas Adams was saying in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy is that the universe is the answer, and what we really need to figure out are what questions to ask about the answer that is the universe.
Yeah.
And that the question is really the hard part. And if you can properly frame the question, then the answer, relatively speaking, is easy. So therefore, if you want to understand what questions to ask about the universe, you want to understand the meaning of life, we need to expand the scope and scale of consciousness so that we're better able to understand the nature of the universe and understand the meaning of life.
And ultimately, the most important part would be to ask the right question.
Yes.
Thereby elevating the role of the interviewer.
Yes, exactly.
As the most important human in the room.
Absolutely. Good questions are, you know, it's hard to come up with good questions. Absolutely. But yeah, like it's like that. That is the foundation of my philosophy, is that I am curious about the nature of the universe. And, you know, and obviously I will die. I don't know when I'll die, but I won't live forever. But I would like to know that we're on a path to understanding the nature of the universe and the meaning of life and what questions to ask about the answer that is the universe. And so if we expand the scope and scale of humanity and consciousness in general, which includes silicon consciousness, then that seems like a fundamentally good thing.
Are you familiar with Commander David Fravor's account of the tic-tac UFO that he encountered off of the coast of San Diego? Lex Fridman?
Yeah.
Lex Fridman interviewed him on his podcast, and I interviewed him as well. And if you ever get a chance to listen to Lex's conversation with him, it's really excellent. But this guy is a naval fighter pilot, and he talked about this thing that they tracked on radar that went from more than 60,000 feet above sea level to 1 foot in less than a second, shaped like a tic-tac, no visible sign of propulsion. Blocked radar, actively jammed their tracking systems, and then went to their predetermined point that they were supposed to, that the fighter jet was supposed to scramble to, went to it 30 miles away in, you know, a couple seconds. Like, they have no idea how it did it. They don't know what it is.
Okay.
And these guys that were working for the Navy off the coast said they had encountered them several times. They didn't know what they were. They didn't know what to do.
What did they have? Just did photo nothing. Or something?
I mean, they do. They have video of it.
Okay. Honestly, I think I would know if there were aliens.
I would hope so. That's what I'm asking you.
No, I'd be jumping on that. Like.
You should watch that conversation with Lex.
It's sure.
Like, here's the thing. Do you think that they would want us to know, or do you think they would just be observing and making sure we don't blow ourselves up? Would
I don't know,
if
man.
You were
they're
an
real
alien civilization.
They sure are subtle. I mean, if they wanted us to know, obviously they could just
for sure.
You know, show up and walk down Main Street. You know,
right.
Like, hey, I'm an alien. Check me out. You know,
right?
Here's my spaceship. I just land in the middle of Times Square. I'd be like,
right,
okay.
Or hover over downtown LA.
Yeah,
yeah.
We'd be like, okay, we believe you.
Yeah.
So whatever they are very subtle. These aliens.
How often do you think about it?
Zero.
Zero? Even though you're thinking about interplanetary travel, you don't really think about aliens.
No. I mean, if they show up, I'm like, great. Okay, now this is new information. Yeah.
What an interesting way of putting it. This is new information.
This is new information. Like, where were you guys up till now?
Yeah.
So, anyway, listen, if I see some evidence for aliens, I'll be the first to be like, aliens, you know?
Right. Then you'll investigate. But until then, you think it's kind of a waste of time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like very often wokeness is not building on liberalism. It's the opposite of liberalism. I can mention many examples where it's the opposite, including free speech.
Free speech is actually is extremely important. And it's bizarre that we've come to this point where free speech used to be a left or liberal value. And yet we see from, you know, the in quotes left a desire to actually censor. That seems crazy. I mean, I think we should be extremely concerned about anything that undermines the First Amendment. There's a reason for the First Amendment. The First Amendment is because people came from countries where they could not speak freely and where saying certain things would get you thrown into prison. And they were like, well, we don't want that here. And by the way, in many parts of the world, including parts of the world that people might think are relatively similar to the United States, the speech laws are draconian. We must protect free speech, and free speech only matters. It's only relevant when it's someone you don't like saying something you don't like, because obviously the speech that you like is you know, that's easy. So it's the thing about censorship is that for those who would advocate it, just remember at some point that will be turned on you. If you're stranded on a desert island with no food, all the Bitcoin in the world will not stop you from starving. Now, there is a fundamental issue with say, Bitcoin in its current form, in that it's the transaction volume is very limited, and the latency for a properly confirmed transaction is too long, much longer than you'd like. So it's actually not great from a transaction volume standpoint or a latency standpoint. If a currency is too deflationary, or should say if a currency is expected to increase in value over time, there's reluctance to spend it because you're like, oh, I'll just hold it and not spend it because its scarcity is increasing with time. So if I spend it now, then I will regret spending it. So I will just, you know, hodl it. Mm-hmm. But if there's some dilution of the currency occurring over time, that's more of an incentive to use it as a currency. So Dogecoin, somewhat randomly, has a fixed number of sort of coins or hash strings that are generated every year. So there's some inflation, but it's not a percentage base. It's a fixed number. So the percentage of inflation will necessarily decline over time. So I'm not saying that it's like the ideal system for a currency, but I think it actually is just fundamentally better than anything else I've seen. I would say that forms the basis of my philosophy, which is that we don't know the meaning of life, but the more we can expand the scope and scale of consciousness, digital and biological, the more we're able to understand what questions to ask about the answer that is the universe. So I have a philosophy of curiosity.
Well, as you said, I think one of the big goals of XAI is to understand the universe.
Yes. That's our simple three-word mission.
If you look out far into the future, do you think on this level of physics, the very edge of what we understand about physics, do you think it will make discoveries, sort of the sexiest discovery of them as we know now, sort of unifying general relativity and quantum mechanics? So coming up with a theory of everything. Do you think it could push towards that direction, almost like theoretical physics discoveries?
If an AI cannot figure out new physics, it's clearly not equal to humans, let alone nor has surpassed humans, because humans have figured out new physics. They've just, you know, physics is just understanding, you know, deepening one's insight into how reality works, and then there's engineering, which is inventing things that have never existed. Now, the range of possibilities for engineering is far greater than for physics, because, you know, once you figure out the rules of the universe, that's it. You've discovered things that already existed, but from that you can then build technologies that are really almost limitless in the variety and you know. It's like once you understand the rules of the game properly, and we with current physics, we do at least at a local level understand how physics works very well. Our ability to predict things is incredibly good. Like quantum mechanics is the degree to which quantum mechanics can predict outcomes is incredible. That was my hardest class in college, by the way. my senior quantum mechanics class was harder than all of my other classes put together.
To get an AI system, a large language model, to reliably be as reliable as quantum mechanics and physics is very difficult.
Yeah, you have to test any conclusions against the ground truth of reality. Reality is the ultimate judge. Like physics is the law, everything else is a recommendation. I've seen plenty of people break the laws made by man, but none break the laws made by physics.
Yeah, it's a good test, actually. If this LLM understands and matches physics, then you can more reliably trust whatever it thinks about the current state of politics. In some sense.
And it's also not the case currently that even that its internal logic is not consistent. So especially with the approach of like just predicting token, predict, token, predict, token. It's like a vector sum. You know, you're summing up a bunch of vectors. You can get drift. So as those, a little bit of error adds up. And by the time you are many tokens down the path, it doesn't make any sense.
So it has to be somehow self-aware about the drift.
It has to be self-aware about the drift and then look at the thing as a gestalt, as a whole. Mm-hmm. And say, does it have coherence as a whole?
I mean, we have archaeologists going all over the world looking at things. You know, there's this people, like, if we were to find something like, let's say, like a cube of titanium, just like a 1-inch cube of titanium, say, in the middle of the pyramid, I'd be like, aliens for sure. There's no way they could have made a titanium back then. Mm. There's no way. That's hard. That's all. One little, didn't even need a computer. Like a computer would be like, hey, wow, computers, they didn't have computers back then, so it must be aliens. But even just like some advanced metallurgy, anything, like, we didn't say anything like that.
Right. Nothing like that that we could point to that we can't do.
Everything that we found archaeologically is consistent with the time, the technology they had at that time.
Archaeologically.
Yes.
Yeah. So you're just talking about old stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, just throughout history. It's not like...
Yeah.
Like if aliens visited, there'd be something buried somewhere, I think. We haven't seen anything. So, anyway. I mean, maybe there are aliens, but they're very subtle. If there are, they're just very... they're being pretty shy. So...
Well, how do you know who you can trust in work and personally?
I mean, I guess you look at somebody's track record over time, and if they've data. Got a... You know, I guess you kind of use your neural net to assess, you know, someone and...
Neural nets don't feel pain. Your neural net has consciousness. It might feel pain when people betray you. It can make.
I mean, to be frank, I mean, I've almost never been betrayed. Very, very rare. So, you know, for what it's worth.
I guess karma be good to people, and they'll be good to you.
Yeah, karma is real.
Are there people you trust? Let me edit that question. Are there people close to you that call you out on your bullshit?
Well, the expert form is very helpful for that. If you're looking for critical feedback.
Can it push you like into the extremes more? The extremes of thought make you cynical about human nature in general?
I don't think I will be cynical. In fact, I think, my feeling is that one should be, you know, never trust a cynic. The reason is that cynics excuse their own bad behavior by saying everyone does it because they're cynical. So I always be, it's a red flag if someone's a cynic, a true cynic.
Yeah, there's a degree of projection there that's always fun to watch from the outside and enjoy the,
well,
the
just
hypocrisy.
This is an important point that I think people who are listening should bear in mind. If somebody is cynical, meaning that they see bad behavior in everyone, it's easy for them to excuse their own bad behavior by saying, well, everyone does it. But it's not true. I think most people are kind of medium good.
Okay, so let me ask you about Mars. You mentioned it would be great for science to put a base on the moon to do some research, but the truly big leap, again, in this category of seemingly impossible, is to put a human being on Mars. When do you think SpaceX will land a human being on Mars?
Best case is about 5 years, worst case, 10 years.
What are the determining factors, would you say, from an engineering perspective, or is that not the bottlenecks?
It's fundamentally engineering the vehicle. Starship is the most complex and advanced rocket that's ever been made by, I don't know, order of magnitude or something like that. It's a lot. It's really next level. So, and the fundamental optimization of Starship is minimizing cost per ton to orbit and ultimately cost per ton to the surface of Mars. This may seem like a mercantile objective, but it is actually the thing that needs to be optimized. Like there is a certain cost per ton to the surface of Mars where we can afford to establish a self-sustaining city, and then above that we cannot afford to do it. So right now you couldn't fly to Mars for $1 trillion. No amount of money could get you a ticket to Mars. So we need to get that above, to get that like something that is actually possible at all.
Walter Isaacson, in his new biography of you, wrote about your difficult childhood. Will you ever find forgiveness in your heart for everything that has happened to you in that period of your life?
What is forgiveness? I do not, at least I don't think I harbor resentment, so nothing to forgive.
You know, forgiveness is difficult for people. It seems like you don't harbor the resentment.
I mean, I try to think about, like, what is going to affect the future in a good way? And holding on to grudges. Mm-hmm. Does not affect the future in a good way.
You're a father, a proud father. What have you learned about life from your kids, those little biological organisms?
I mean, developing AI and watching, say, a little X grow is fascinating because there are far more parallels than I would have expected. I mean, I can see his biological neural net making more and more sense of the world, and I can see the digital neural net making more and more sense of the world at the same time.
Do you see the beauty and magic in both?
Yes. I mean, one of the things with kids is that, you kind of see the world anew in their eyes. You know, to them, everything is new and fresh. And then when you see that, them experience the world as new and fresh,
You do too.
I think it's a real weakness to want to be liked. A real weakness. I do not have that.
Let me ask you this then. There's a difference between saying I don't care if anyone likes me or they hate me.
Yeah.
But given your power and given what you have amassed and the importance you have, I would think you want to be trusted. I would think maybe you don't need to be liked or hated, but trusted matters. If X is going to become a financial platform where people are going to put their money, where the government's going to give you money for rockets, where people are going to get into the cars, they need to ultimately decide that you are, maybe they don't have to decide that they love you, but that you are ultimately a decent and good human being.
Yes, I mean, I think I am. But I'm certainly not going to do some sort of tap dance to prove to people that I am. So as for trust, I mean, I think we break that down in a few ways. If you want satellites sent to orbit reliably, SpaceX will do 80% of all mass to orbit this year. China will do 12%. The rest of the world will do 8%. That includes Boeing, Lockheed, and everyone else. So the track record of the rocket is the best by far of anything. You could hate my guts next. You could not trust me. It is irrelevant. The rocket track record speaks for itself. With respect to Tesla, we make the best cars. Whether you hate me, like me, or indifferent, do you want the best car or do you not want the best car?
If we go to the big questions once again, you said you're with Einstein, that you believe in the God of Spinoza.
Yes.
So, you know, that's a view that God is like the universe and reveals himself through the laws of physics, or as Einstein said, through the lawful harmony of the world.
Yeah, I would agree that God of the simulator or whatever, the supreme being or beings, reveal themselves through the physics. You know, they're creators of this existence. And it's incumbent upon us to try to understand more about this wondrous creation.
Who created this thing? Who's running this thing? Like, embodying it into a singular question with a sexy word on top of it is like focusing the mind to understand. It does seem like there's again, it could be an illusion. It seems like there's a purpose, that there's an underlying master plan of some kind. It seems like...
There may not be a master plan in the sense... So there's like maybe an interesting answer to the question of determinism versus free will is that if we are in a simulation, the reason that these higher beings would hold a simulation is to see what happens. So it's not they don't know what happened. Otherwise, they wouldn't hold the simulation.
Mm-hmm.
So when humans create a simulation, so at SpaceX and Tesla, we create simulations all the time. Especially for the rocket, you have to run a lot of simulations to understand what's going to happen, because you can't really test the rocket until it goes to space. And you want it to work, so you have to simulate subsonic, transonic, supersonic, hypersonic ascent, and then coming back, super high heating, and orbital dynamics. All this is going to be simulated, so because you don't get very many kicks at the can. But we run the simulations to see what happens. Not if we knew what happens, we wouldn't run the simulation. So if whoever created this existence is they're running it because they don't know what's going to happen. Not because they do.
There's not a let the chips fall where they may approach to those businesses, I don't think.
No, we focus on making the best products. And Tesla's gotten to where it's gotten with no advertising at all.
I understand that.
Tesla currently sells twice as much in terms of electric vehicles as the rest of electric car makers in the United States combined. Tesla has done more to help the environment than all other companies combined. It would be fair to say that, therefore, as a leader of the company, I've done more for the environment than everyone else, any single human on Earth.
How do you feel about that?
How do I feel about that?
Yeah, no, I'm asking you personally how you feel about that, because we're talking about power and influence and...
I'm saying what I care about is the reality of goodness, not the perception of it. And what I see all over the place is people who care about looking good while doing evil. Fuck them, okay?
Channeling Carl Sagan. Look again at that dot. That's here. That's home. That's us. On it, everyone you love, everyone you know, everyone you've ever heard of, every human being who ever was, lived out their life. The aggregate of our joy and suffering, thousands of competent religions, ideologies, and economic doctrines.
every hunter and forager, every hero and coward, every creator and destroyer of civilization, every king and peasant, every young couple in love, every mother and father, hopeful child, inventor and explorer, every teacher of morals, every corrupt politician, every superstar, every supreme leader, every saint and sinner in the history of our species lived there, on a mote of dust suspended in a sunbeam. Our planet is a lonely speck in the great enveloping cosmic dark. In our obscurity, in all this vastness, there is no hint that help will come from elsewhere to save us from ourselves. The Earth is the only world known so far to harbor life. There is nowhere else, at least in the near future, to which our species could migrate. This is not true. This is false. Mars.
And I think Carl Sagan would agree with that. He couldn't even imagine it at that time. So thank you for making the world dream, and thank you for talking today. I really appreciate it.
So what advice do I have for college graduates? Certainly, I'd invite you to apply for a job at SolarCity or Tesla or SpaceX. If not, then if that doesn't work for whatever reason, then apply to jobs at other companies in that arena, or try starting a company.
If you study engineering and you figure out how to design new things, then it's relatively easy to start a company. You just need to get a few like-minded people with you.
Although I have to say that the space business is quite hard to start a company in the space business because it's such a capital-intensive business. So it may be better to do something in solar power, or if you're going to do it in cars, do it in as kind of a component supplier for cars or something like that.
Musk has college degrees in business and physics, but SpaceX is his first venture in aerospace.
How did you get the expertise to be the chief technology officer of a rocket ship company?
I do have a physics background. That's helpful as a foundation. And then I read a lot of books and talked to a lot of smart people.
Don't just follow the trend. You may have heard me say that it's good to think in terms of the physics approach or first principles, which is, rather than reasoning by analogy, you boil things down to the most fundamental truths you can imagine and you reason up from there. And this is a good way to figure out if something really makes sense or if it's just what everybody else is doing. It's hard to think that way. You can't think that way about everything. It takes a lot of effort. But if you're trying to do something new, it's the best way to think. And that framework was developed by physicists to figure out counterintuitive things like quantum mechanics. So it's really a powerful method.
And I want to know, what is the one thing that has surprised you about your life?
Well, I'm surprised about the whole thing, honestly. I certainly didn't expect for any of these things to happen, honestly. I knew I wanted to be involved in technology. In fact, the only reason I started a company back in 95, an internet company, was because I couldn't get it. There were only a few internet companies, and I couldn't get a job at any of them. I tried to get a job at Netscape and sent my resume in and tried hanging out in the lobby, but I was too shy to talk to anyone. And then I was like, okay, well, I guess I'll have to start a company because I can't get a job anywhere.
Thank you.
I wouldn't say I'm fearless. In fact, I think I feel fear quite strongly. But if what I'm doing is important enough, then I just override the fear. Mm-hmm. So, but it's not as though I don't feel. I feel like more strongly than I would like.
I think also people tend to overweight risk on a personal level. It's one thing if you've got, you know, a mortgage to pay and kids to support, and that if you were to deviate from your job, how are you going to feed your family and pay the rent? And okay, that's understandable. But let's say you're young and you're just coming out of college or coming out of high school or whatever. What do you risk? You know, you're not going to stop. I mean, right. It's really certainly not in any kind of modern economy. It's so easy to earn enough money just to live somewhere and eat food. I don't know what are the people really afraid of. They're mostly afraid of failure. I think people should be less risk averse when
there's not much at risk. What is education? Like, you're basically downloading data and algorithms into your brain. And it's actually amazingly bad in conventional education, because like, it shouldn't be like this huge chore. Like, the more you can gamify the process of learning, the better.
I was at sort of a slight existential crisis, because I was trying to figure out what does it all mean? Like, what's the purpose of things? And I came to the conclusion that if we can advance the knowledge of the world, if we can do things that expand the scope and scale of consciousness, then we're better able to ask the right questions and become more enlightened, and that's really the only way forward.
What drives you? What is it that when you wake up in the morning, do you see a problem and you want to solve it?
The thing that drives me is that I want to be able to think about the future and you know, feel good about that. So we're doing what we can to have the future be as good as possible, to be inspired by what is likely to happen, and to look forward to the next day. That's what really drives me is trying to figure out how do we make sure that things are great and going to be so, and that's the underlying principle behind Tesla and SpaceX, is that I think it's pretty important that we accelerate the transition to sustainable generation and consumption of energy. It's inevitable, but it matters if it happens sooner or later. And then SpaceX is about helping make life multiplanetary, and doing what we can to continue the dream of Apollo, ultimately make a contribution to life becoming multiplanetary.
Let's talk a little more about that. I think everyone very interested in that when you say making life multiplanetary.
Yeah, that's exciting.
It is exciting. So what's your vision there?
You know, I think, you know, particularly for Americans, you know, like, think about America is a nation of explorers. People came here from other parts of the world that, you know, chose to give up the known in favor of the unknown. So I think exploration, like, I think the United States is a distillation of the human spirit of exploration. So that's why it appeals to Americans so much. You know, you can see this when, say, there was a shuttle tragedy and 7 people died. And that's terrible, but, you know, a lot of people die all the time. But why do we care so much? Because it was the dream of exploration that was dying along with those people. That's why.
I mean, I thought both Tesla and SpaceX would fail at the beginning.
You thought?
Yeah, so, sure.
Really?
Of course.
But nevertheless, you put all your money in there.
I expected to lose it. Well, technically, what I thought was, well, I'll take half the money from PayPal, and if I lose half of it, that's okay. But then, of course, the companies encounter difficulties, and then I have a choice of either let the company die or put, you know, all the money into the companies. And so I really didn't want the companies to die, so I put all the money in the companies.
Yeah.
And then I had to borrow money for friends to pay living expenses.
Yes.
You know, just looking just for evidence of exceptional ability. And if there's a track record of exceptional achievement, then it's likely that that will continue into the future. Mm-hmm. Well, it really depends on the stakes. If the stakes are high, if it's really important, then one should, then I, you know, will overcome the fear and just do it anyway. Mm-hmm.
But essentially, I mean, I just drive overrides fear, but I feel the fear. It's kind of annoying. I wish I didn't.
Okay.
I wish I felt it less.
GEICO makes it easy to get affordable renter's insurance in as little as 90 seconds. And then you'll start to wonder why everything else isn't so fast. Like, why does it take so long to do the dishes? A meal that's gone in three requires 45 minutes worth of dishes. Doesn't make sense. But it does make sense to get renter's insurance through GEICO. That way, that pile of dirty dishes and the other things you love are covered. Get more with GEICO.